Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Columbia University sociologist Sudhir Venkatesh is with us now. You might know him from his previous book, Gang Leader for a Day, about gangs in Chicago, or from his work with Freakonomics. His new book pulls together his work here in New York, where he has spent the last few years speaking with hundreds of high-end and street-level drug dealers, sex workers, artists, and other members of New York City's underground economy. His new book is The Floating City, a rogue sociologist lost and found in New York's underground economy. Sudhir Venkatesh, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Why The Floating City, that title? I know Chicago is a city of neighborhoods, you've written. Is New York less defined? Is that why it's a floating city?
There are certainly neighborhoods in New York, and as a resident, I love my neighborhood. I think the floating city captures a sentiment or a slice of the personality of New York, which is that it pushes people to cross boundaries, to establish networks, to get out of their comfortable station. And in the underground economy, that happens so frequently in that it's an entrepreneurial venture for people. And this book was really an attempt to capture how people move around the city to make all of this kind of money off the books.
And the underground economy isn't only sex workers and drug dealers. It's day laborers and car mechanics and nannies and housekeepers and anybody who's doing anything for you off the books. Musicians can be a part of it. So tell us about Shine, who's from Harlem. His story seems to epitomize some of these blurred lines. And actually, he's the one who tells you that New York is a floating city, right?
That's right. So Shine is an African-American resident of Central Harlem who for about 10 years was selling crack cocaine. And when the market for crack cocaine dried up in New York, he needed a new livelihood. And he started a lot of small ventures. He funded some street vendors and things like that. And then he realized that crack cocaine is, after all, a form of cocaine. And he thought, well, somebody's going to be buying this, probably people who have more money than I do. And so he decided to refashion himself, retrofit himself as somebody who could reach out to the rising middle and upper middle class of New York. And he started hanging around Wall Street and Midtown and reinvented himself as a cocaine dealer. Okay, this is a story of a criminal, absolutely, but it's also a story of an aspiring person who gets out of their neighborhood literally and tries to reinvent himself.
So just simply, instead of selling drugs on 128th Street, he's selling drugs on Wall Street?
Selling drugs in hotels and in law offices and in clubs and doing it all off the streets through texting and through some high-tech means. He's just he's a high-tech entrepreneur.
And there's a video store that you spend time in. The people there are from different races from all over the city, and there's prostitution going on there as well. How does the video store fit into your idea of New York as a network place?
How many times have all of us walked into a store or gotten into a cab and wondered, what is an immigrant story? How do they settle into the city? Well, I started to find that the underground economy, the off-the-books economy, is such a key vehicle for immigrants. And so many of these stores in Hell's Kitchen and Midtown that were once part of the fabric of New York housed a very vibrant underground economy, from selling visas to finding immigrants jobs at bodegas to porn and the sex trade, et cetera. Sex workers might use the store in exchange for paying the manager of a store a small fee. It was a real modern gateway for the immigrants, but just like the gateway for Irish and Italians and decades earlier.
Soliciting people to write fake reviews on Yelp, which is how we started our show this morning. And anyone listening, part of the underground economy, we can definitely take your calls anonymously if you prefer. Call in and tell us about your experience, how you network, the complications, what you hope to do in the future, how it's different from being part of the traditional economy, your sense of right and wrong around what you do. 212-433-WNYC. Anyone? 212-433-9692. And as I say, anonymous is okay here, or pseudonymous. For Sudhir Venkatesh, Columbia University sociologist, author now of The Floating City, a rogue sociologist lost and found in New York's underground economy. You write about a pet peeve of yours, which is fascinating to me and is going to maybe make a lot of people angry or just make them question what they assume. the stereotype that single-parent matriarchal families and the history of slavery make it, quote, difficult for many inner-city blacks to enter the social mainstream, unquote. And you argue that the poor are actually more resilient and economically creative, and you point to problems in the suburbs by contrast. Can you expand on that?
We have this view of the underground economy that it's a bunch of survivalists and down-and-out people. And I like to call it the other innovation economy because the consequences are immediate. People have to be incredibly ingenious. And they have to do something which I find is extraordinarily creative, which is that they have to be willing to forgive other people. So the person that they hate or the person that they're in an argument with might be their fellow collaborator at another point. I was trying to find ways to shift our stereotypes of what it means to live in these communities and what it means to thrive in these communities. And I think the suburban connection was meant to be also a provocative way of saying, you know, there are some aspects of suburbs we don't normally consider. For example, in the last 10 years, the fastest rising poverty is in the suburbs, not in the inner cities. Many domestic issues like alcohol abuse or domestic violence, those are much higher in suburbs. We need a cognitive shift, I think, in terms of how we think about city and suburb if we're going to appreciate the talents that people have.
And yet, maybe it's circular reasoning, but one could ask then, why is there so much poverty in low-income areas?
Absolutely. Well, those are structural issues that I think if you take people, and they're not all drug traffickers by any means, most aren't, but if you take very, very aspiring people who are doing incredibly innovative things on the streets and street vending and things like that, many of them don't have access to credit. They can't build a credit profile. There's no way to jump from a small street vendor to someone who could actually start a small business. That takes government help. That takes our help.
Let's hear some callers. Jeff in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
What do you do? What do you like to say?
I'm involved in the underground gambling scene. I deal cards at gambling clubs, and I make money doing that. Want to say it's a vibrant scene, and there's it provides me a steady income.
Should it be legal?
I'm sorry?
Should it be legal, in your opinion?
I believe so, yes. I believe so.
Because you don't feel you're hurting anybody, you're just doing something off the books because the law doesn't allow it, that serves people?
Yes, I mean, it's going to happen one way or another. People will still gamble. I believe that we should bring the government into it, help regulate it, make safety more of a top notch, because this again is illegal and it's not regulated, and there's no safety, no, so to speak, in it.
Of course, then you'd have to pay taxes.
Indeed.
Jeff, thank you for your call. James in Central New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing? I've been doing this for 3 years since I was laid off from my corporate job in the early part of the Great Recession, and I just see a lot of the underground economy or people my age, over 50, having to find whatever they can, from driving people to the airport to whatever they can for cash.
And what is it? What is it for you? What are you doing?
I'm a dog walker. Ah. I'm a dog walker.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, again, an example from these two callers that some off-the-books activity is legal, some off-the-books activity is not legal, not the whole underground economy is crime.
Absolutely. I'll give you what I think are the two most lucrative underground economies in New York City, or among the most lucrative, one which may surprise you and one which won't. Well, sex work. Okay, so that there's a lot of there's a lot of sale of sexual services that probably won't surprise you. But what about Airbnb? For some cities, San Francisco generated $56 million last year in revenue. New York probably more than that. Difficult to count. Not much of that is going to tax. Not much of that is being paid. Taxes aren't being paid on much of that. So that's another extraordinary, innovative, creative underground economy that operates in New York and helps people out.
Marion in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marion.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to say the same thing, that the whole renovation industry works on cash. I mean, I have renovated apartments in the buildings that I own, and it is almost impossible to pay a lot of the renovating people in a check. So I pay regularly in cash. I always get a receipt. I always tie it into materials and to the improvements made in the apartments. And twice in the last 30 years, I have been audited by the IRS over these these expenses on my report, and I go down there, and I produce all my receipts, and I show the evidence of the renovations, and I went right through the audit, and I never was questioned by the IRS.
In other words, you showed the receipts of paying in cash?
Absolutely, and I tied it in with the materials that were involved and the renovation. I always brought pictures of before and after. I never paid a cent in undue taxes by the IRS. They accepted it.
Fascinating. A true confession from Marion and Chelsea. So in that case, her payouts are receipted and deemed legal as the employer, I guess, on some level by the IRS. I'm not sure what her tax penalty would be as the buyer, but the construction workers who work for her obviously wanted to be paid off the books.
Absolutely. But that generates another issue, which is that the people that she's paying probably also could be found and detected at some point, and they might have to pay taxes or pay a penalty as well.
They're more vulnerable. Giovanni and Bed-Stuy are on WNYC. Hi, Giovanni.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think there is a very, very large underground economy that really hasn't been referenced, and that is any place on the street that has an ability to collect cash and not a cash register recording the sale. And if you go through any of the boroughs, there's a huge amount of people that are vending food or vending items. Or if you go to these free fairs, for example, that they have in New York City, all over New York City, you go to any flea market, all these people are taking in cash. And that's just an avenue not to pay taxes.
Right. And there are people who pick you up in cars to take you from place to place without a license plate that begins with T, and et cetera. So how big is the underground economy in New York City? Was that at all? I know you're a sociologist. You're interested in how people live and what's happening in the culture. Do you also quantify at all, like what percentage of the entire economy in New York City is underground?
The two most comfortable estimates I have, both by economists, are that one is that about 20 to 25% of GDP in a city like New York is underground. Meaning something like every 2 out of 5 commercial transactions is taking place off the books. And it's much higher in immigrant communities than it is in communities of people born in America predominantly.
So what do you want people to take away from this book ultimately? Is it simply stories of the richness and variety of economic life in New York? Or is there also some policy? Is there also some understanding of what it's like for a lot of people in New York that, you know, will help make life better for them? What's your ultimate goal here?
I think first is just to change our view about how we think about the underground economy. So we look at it much more broadly. So it's not just the drug traffickers. It's also the people working online, like the Airbnb folks or folks in eBay, doing innovative work, creating new forms of currency among farmers in Massachusetts, whatever it happens to be. The second is that I think we need a call to government action, because if you look in the developing world, they actually are far more advanced than we are in helping in realizing people are working informally. Let's give them credit. Let's give them support so that eventually they can come into the mainstream. Here, our first response is criminalizing them. And that stops a lot of the entrepreneurship that's already going to happen. We need to shift our approach.
We have about a minute and a half left. I want to just touch on that New York Times article about you from last year that I'm sure a lot of our listeners read, questioning some of your research methods and finances and associations. I'll ask you about one piece of it, and that's your work with the FBI, which the Times suggested was troubling because research subjects might have fears that you would turn them in, especially when you're working with people who are engaged in illegal activity. What's your role with the FBI?
I was a senior advisor for about 2.5 years at the Department of Justice. During that time, I was not doing any of this research. But absolutely, people get a little nervous, and you have to be very transparent with them and keep the lines absolutely clear and tell them you're going to protect their anonymity at all costs.
What's the reason that a sociologist interested in street life would also consult the FBI?
They brought me aboard to try to understand what kind of data that they should be looking for, how much of this big data craze that we have could somehow help them to better measure, evaluate, predict what's going to happen in criminal trends around the country and the world.
20 seconds. Have Schein and others you write about read the book? Any reaction?
I don't think they have. I haven't kept up with most of them, and I imagine I'll get some phone calls in the next couple of weeks.
Columbia University sociologist Sudhir Venkatesh has written The Floating City, a rogue sociologist lost and found in New York's underground economy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.